Okay, so Ms. Dion's a looker out there in Riverside.
Think big. ThinkBigRadio.com for all of your realty, financial, and business networking needs. Hello, ThinkBigRadio.com listeners. Big and Coach Dion here, your host tonight. I would like to thank you all for your continued support and spreading the word about Think Big Radio. Join us Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays from 7:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time to hear our live interviews with business owners, investors, networkers, and people who are making it happen and sharing their how. If you have a business to share or idea, don't be a stranger on Wednesdays between 8:30 and 9 p.m. Central Standard Time with your one-minute commercial on our WOW segment, W-O-W, Word Out Wednesdays, where you get the word out. Today's guest is a very remarkable gentleman. Some know him as Larry Flash Jenkins. He was the very first African-American to be featured on all three of the major networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC. Not only was he doing that, but he's also a major producer with standing room only releases throughout the United States. Larry Flash Jenkins, are you there?
I'm here. How you doing?
So far, so good. Coach Dion, are you there?
I am so here and ready.
We need to get right into your birth. Tell us your earliest memory and move forward.
My earliest memory, huh? Well, you know, I was born in Long Island, New York, out in Selden, and raised in Chicago. And, you know, I went to Bryn Mawr, and from there, my high school was Finger High School. Yeah, Finger High School on 112th and Wallace.
Wow.
Yeah. I excelled in track, baseball, basketball, and I was on the bowling team. And, you know, theater never entered my mind. You know, it was sissy stuff to be in the theater program or the drama program, as they called it.
You're right, that and cooking.
Yeah, that was some girly stuff. So afterwards, I got the Cincinnati Reds was interested in me in baseball. So my mother and I decided to do a coin flip because she always thought I was a ham. So we did the coin flip for me being an actor or a baseball player because she didn't want me on them nasty buses going from minor league town to minor league town.
Right,
so she won, and next thing I know, I was over at Olive Harvey College, you know, studying theater. And then from there, after I was on the dean's list, got straight A's and got big thumbs up for all my performances in Days of Absence and Pearly Victorious, I got a drama scholarship to SIU, Southern Illinois University in Carbondale.
Okay.
And then from there, I got straight A's there as well. I got a scholarship landing me at Pepperdine University out here in California, where I now reside. Been here ever since 75, and before you know it, I was in Roger Mosley's acting class with Marla Gibbs and some other notables and stuff, and Raymond St. Jacques and so forth. And next thing you know, boom, bam, boom, you know, I'm on a TV pilot with Robert Foxworth and Christine Belfort. So it just led from there, and so it just triggered my career. And got my feet wet, and I don't regret, you know, the path I took.
Wow, that's great. And so when was it that you decided that, you know what, I love acting, and that's something that I want to pursue? Because, I mean, before you even got behind the scenes, because you must have loved it that much that you wanted to transition to, you know, actually, you know, being a producer and a writer and all of those things. How did it come about that you was just like, wow, I love this acting?
Yeah, I think it was the minute I hit the stage when I was over at Olive Harvey College. The very first time I did my very, very first play, Days of Absence, and I played the role of Clem, I said this could be kind of fun. So it was, I was a natural for it, but I studied hard and I think that that's what led me to it was the Olive Harvey moment. And because then from there, when I excelled and was on the dean's list there and SIU and at Pepperdine, and then next thing you know, I got discovered and was on a pilot you know, and I had to quit working Burger King because I was assistant manager over there. I was there for a hot minute, you know, for a brief coffee break. Because next thing I know, you know, I'm shooting this pilot, you know, making about $15,000-$20,000 for the you know, for the week.
Wow, and I know that was great.
Yeah. Yeah, it was totally. You know, I'm the type. I set lofty goals anyway. When I was playing basketball, you know, I wanted to make sure, you know, where like during the summer we had the YMCA leagues. I used to prepare for and stay in shape for. I used to average 28, 29 points a game, and then I just wanted to make sure even when I was acting, I prepared, you know, the same way. You know, I used to always work out and stuff and stay in different classes and stay on top of it, rehearse my lines, you know, and make sure I know exactly what I'm doing. I would encourage my co-star who's with me, who's playing alongside with me in the scene, let's get together and rehearse. So we'll have it so down pat and create some ideas, some moments together on stage. And that's how I did it, man. And that's my technique even today.
You know, Larry, that is just so great. One of the things I heard you say was that you went to Olive Harvey College, and that's
right.
Where you started your first acting courses. When did you decide, okay, I want to become an actor? Because I went to school to become a paralegal, but I'm not a paralegal anymore. I'm a business owner. But when does one decide, like, okay, I want to become an actor? At that point, did you know you were going to school to become an actor? When did you decide to come on?
Yeah, then when me and my mother made that bet and I lost instead of becoming a minor league baseball player, and I ended up going to Olive Harvey College because she didn't want me to go away to college right then. I was just 18 years old, and she just wanted to see how I tested the waters here locally. And
right.
She let me go to SIU that was kind of local, you know, even though it was in Carbondale, you know, about 4 or 6 hour ride, whatever it was. So then, soon I hit Olive Harvey stage and realized taking the classes, voice and diction and stage movement, and all my buddies I grew up with in Chicago, so I'm hope they're listening and stuff. They used to tease me and stuff about, well, anybody could be on a dean's list if you take voice lesson 101 and stage movement 102. You know, I could be on a dean's list too. Where are your tough classes at? And I said I had to take some tough classes as well. You know, but I wanted to be an actor the minute I hit the stage.
Wow.
Wow. And how has fame treated you?
Huh?
How has fame treated you?
It's doing very well. It's doing very well. You know, after I came out here and got discovered from that show there in which I did. I think it was called Susan and Sam or something like that. It led me to do a couple of movies. I did one with Anne Margaret and John Voight called Looking to Get Out. And next thing I know, I was I did MASH. I was laying in the bed next to Alan Alda and all of the guys and stuff, and a major guest star on the show. And then from there, I did a one or two liner on The White Shadow. And that's what brought the attention of me to them was when I did that episode, because they also heard about me in a play I was doing at the same time. So when the next season came up and they were putting the regulars, new regulars on the show, I was one of the first people they called in. And even though they sent me through like two or three auditions, you know, and basketball auditions and stuff, you know, I got the role. And I'll never forget Bruce Paltrow, who's Gwyneth Paltrow's dad, who created the show along with St. Elsewhere. He had me, shoot ball. He said, "Do you ever miss?" And I said, "No." And he said, "I want to see you in my office." So we went in the office, and he just said, "Well, tell me about yourself." And I said, "Well, you first. Tell me about you."
You put the ball in his hand, huh? You're like, you know you're going to beat him, so you give him, you say, you take it out.
Exactly. I said, so what's up? Why are you sending me through all this where you know I'm a baller, where you can see that out there and stuff, and you know I got chops, so why not cut through the chase and just give me the role now, tell me right now so I can go home and prepare and stuff? And he said, go home. I'm calling you back for network. And sure enough, he called me back for network, And it was so funny, with all them big wheels, about nine of them in there with cigars, Lori opened in the cast director. She came up to me, and she said, "Larry, how do you feel?" I said, "I'm fine. How about you?" And she said, "Well, yeah, I'm good." And she said, "You nervous?" I said, "About what?" And she said, "Do you realize that you are about to be one of the stars of the hottest show on television?"
Wow.
I said, no, I haven't thought about that yet. And she said, where's your script?" I said, "I don't have a script." And I said, "I thought you was going to have one for me." She said, "You didn't keep those slides I gave you before?" I said, "No, I thought. Well, she said, "So you're going to go in there and remember all your lines and everything without a script?" I said, "Yep." And she said, "With all those people there?" I said, "Yep." She said, "Larry, let me get you a script." I said, no, I'm cool. So we went in there, and she was nervous for me because she knew one flop and stuff, I wouldn't get the role and stuff.
Yeah.
And I went in there, and I nailed it. And
you know what's good that I think is that because of the education you had and you were getting straight A's, it's like once you had something in memory, that was it. So for your average person who really didn't apply themselves,
right,
you know, they may have needed all those different things, but
right,
you were a natural at it. That was what you
right
were meant to do.
Right, exactly. And it was so funny that after I got the role, I was called into the writers' meeting because all of the writers wanted to meet me and write the character directly around my personality, and that's what they did. They wrote.
Wow.
Yeah, because I came in real flashy and stuff like that, with my basketball gear on, and but wristbands and stuff like that on, and Day-Glo socks on, and all this kind of stuff, and then just talking junk and talking about the women and what I would do to them. They incorporated all that in my character, Wardell Stone, on the show.
Wow, that's great.
So
it was all from them.
Flash came from it. To all of our listeners, we see Larry Flash Jenkins. Can you enlighten us where the Flash came in from?
The Flash, believe it or not, that came from Bruce Paltrow because I learned all the lines so fast. He said, I'm going to give you the name Flash. And I was using that off and on from bowling, but he used the name Flash. He liked Flash as well and stuff, and so he started calling me that. He would never call me Larry, so it just stuck, and he put it on the credits because I didn't use that on the credits at first.
Wow. And so now is it on all the credits?
Yes, on all the credits, Larry Flash Jenkins. I've done a couple of things where I purposely left the Flash off because I was playing a real, real serious role
right
and stuff, and I just thought it would, would take the edge off and stuff, and it might, you know what I mean? It just make people realize how serious it is. Like Larry Fishburne is now Lawrence Fishburne.
Right.
You know, people, as they get older, they want to sound a little classy. You know,
yeah.
And then Larry Flash Jenkins, it just sounded kind of kiddish and funnyish and stuff in some
yeah
roles. But I do still use it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So, you know, it seems like everything just, you know, anything that you were approached with, you stepped right into it.
Yeah, exactly.
Personality and everything like that. But Larry, tell me, and for our listeners want to know, what's one of your challenges, one of your biggest challenges?
One of my biggest challenges was, I would say, I wrote, produced, and directed a gospel movie starring C.C. Penison called "Don't Touch If You Ain't Prayed," and I played Pastor Jordan, and I just thought that it would be a great challenge for me to play a pastor because I played everything else practically but a pastor, and I said that, you know, I grew up in church. I've always watched them because, you know, great actors watch people. You know, that's the greatness of being an actor to me, is just studying people, watch their movement. I'll never forget in my acting class, Roger Mosley came up to us and said, I want you all to come in next week and give me your very best scene. Create your very best scene in which you think that would blow me away or blow a casting director away. And I came in and imitated my father's brother, because he had gotten hit by a car when he was a young kid, and he was retarded, and he walked real funny. His arms was funny, and he had this funny walk and stuff, and I utilized that character too well to do a scene, and I came from outside and walked into the classroom in character like that.
Wow.
And Roger was blown away by it and stuff, and he always said, and this was before, you know, the White Shuttle. This was when I just got off the plane, from Chicago. And he said that he made one of the greatest compliments to the class, and he said, this boy is going somewhere. If anybody wants to go somewhere with him, you better watch him or stay on his level. And
wow.
That was one of the greatest compliments I ever heard from somebody that gave me a compliment. But I just thought that was a great challenge for me in doing a pastor, because I wanted just to mimic somebody, and I picked out this pastor that I knew from this Baptist church on 34th and Michigan in Chicago that my grandmother grew up.
Oh, I know that church.
Yeah.
That's a nice church.
Yeah.
Oh, it gets packed in there on Sunday.
Exactly, exactly. And he just preaches. And I said, everybody's going down to the river. And you said you can't go down there with me. I said, everybody can't go down there with me. Oh, you all don't want me to preach in here today. And, you know, that kind of thing. And
yeah.
I just developed that character. I thought it was a challenge for me because I was also the writer, producer, and director, and I was one of the co-stars in it. So I had to, I said, if I'm going to be pulling a Spike Lee, I gotta come correct with this. So I had to relive his moments up there preaching to me when I was a young kid.
Now, I heard you had a standing room only screening of your gospel film at the
yes.
Ice Theater on 87th in Chicago.
Absolutely.
Was this along the lines of that character, or was this a different?
Yes, it was. It was that film.
Wow.
It was that film that with C.C. Penison and Randy Brooks, who played Nathan on Young and the Restless.
Okay.
We took it right up there, and it played opposite 40-Year-Old Virgin and Brothers. And my
Ooh,
movie sold out, and I outgrossed theirs for only one screen. I only had one screening, and the people, believe it or not, and I was blown away by it. The husband and wife who owns it is African American, and they said, "Well, what you ought to do is, I mean, this movie is phenomenal, and you're getting all these people. You need to get a distributor behind you, you know, to get this movie out to the audience, because this was before Tyler's movie
right.
had just came out."
You know what? Well, now that you're telling me, I remember that.
Yeah.
I went up there that day. I remember that.
Oh wow!
I didn't see that. I didn't see your movie, but I remember how it was more than the normal crowd there that day at the movies.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And we had a great host from this other station out in Indiana. It's a gospel channel out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a gospel radio station. She was my host. She hosted the whole event for me and gave free giveaways and everything like that. And it was a night to remember.
Wow.
It was really, really
great.
A special night to remember. I videotaped the evening, too, as a matter of fact, because it was so packed, and I had a Q&A questions afterwards. You know, because my movie's about a 40-year-old virgin, but it's a female. You know, C.C.
Wow.
Penison plays a 40-year-old virgin saving herself a marriage. And the response I got was just phenomenal. You know, over 99.9% of the people said, this should be out at the theaters. It would be a big hit. I'd go see it again. I'd tell my friends and da-da-da-da-da. And the music is off the chart, you know, in it, because I have a lot of gospel music. CC can sing her butt off, and she was singing in it.
Right.
So it was, and I had great-looking people in it. You know, it was one of those pretty films, I call them.
Well, okay, let me ask you this, because I know there's a lot of females out there listening tonight. What type of woman are you attracted to? So that we'll just start X-ing out those that, so they'll know there's no chance, you know, because they're going to be asking.
Well, my thing is that I'm a person that if I see somebody and whether they're light-skinned or dark-skinned or short and tall, if they have some kind of sex appeal about them, you got to have high heels or I won't even notice you. But if they have the high heels on and got that sex appeal going on and stuff, you know, they probably have my attention, you know, or me saying hi, or even saying get that young lady a drink down there at the bar or whatever. You know, I'm that kind of guy that'll do that if I feel they have that kind of sex appeal.
Well, we're not going to let you meet Dion, because you're going to buy out the whole bar, and she's not going to take one drink.
Back. I got this one. One, I'm already in L.A., and I wear heels every single time I walk out the door.
You got that sex appeal going on. Yeah, that's cool.
No, that's great. That's great.
Yeah, yeah, the success of that was huge. And and it's funny, right after I did that, I did my next gospel film. It was it's called House of Grace, and it stars the guy from Woman Thou Art Loose, Malik Barnhart. And I had a big screening of it at Magic Johnson Theaters, and Tammy Mack at KGLH hosted it. And it was jam-packed. It went through the roof. George Pinocchio did behind the scenes on it and aired a special interview with me and the stars at 7 o'clock, aired on the news and stuff, and gave me great pub for it and stuff. And once again, the people want this movie out there at the theaters as well.
Now, what can we do here at Think Big Radio to, you know, help or get to the right people that can distribute these movies for you? Because, you know,
What I would like to do is that either a distributor that is a theatrical person, that we can do like a limited release, because I have Lionsgate in my hip pocket. I have New Line Cinema in my hip pocket. I have Fox Faith now in my hip pocket. If I bring them anything that is a finished product and stuff, and bring some P&A to the table, because that's basically what it is. P&A means prints and advertisement. You know, if people bring some P&A to the table, whether it's 25,000, 30,000, or 40,000, 50,000 on up, I can get the film out back up there on 87th, or I can get the film in limited release at a theater in Chicago, and a theater out here, and a theater in Atlanta, and one in New York, and just let it play there and let it milk, you know, because some of them charge only like $5,000 a month and stuff, and the film would like easily bring in $35,000, $40,000, $45,000 a week,
yeah,
you know, because of the showing of it, because it would play like 2 or 3, 4 times or whatever it plays a day and stuff,
right,
throughout the, you know what I mean?
And then you've got the people who saw the last one who, you know, of course, you know, one of the things, too, that I see a lot of people doing is that when they're coming in, they're buying their tickets, you know, that some people are saying, well, you know what, let's get here, let everybody sign in and seen it, put their email addresses here so that when
right.
our next one comes out,
right.
you know, we can give
right.
that type
that.
Of email yep. blast.
Exactly, exactly.
You know,
yep.
And that works beautifully.
Yes, it does. Absolutely, absolutely. Yes, and we did that as well. So that's our challenges and stuff, you know, because I did have one out there, Don't Touch If You Ain't Prayed, one out here at Magic Johnson Theaters, and they both did extraordinarily well. They only played once and stuff, you know, for the screening and opening and stuff, and just the response and stuff, because it's a hell of a story, you know, about a couple of crackheads who find God, and the other one's about a 40-year-old virgin, you know, who find, you know, saving herself a marriage. And both of those stories are something that needs to be tapped on in the church. And it's already been out on DVD and video, and it went through the roof there. But I want to get it out there to the theaters and stuff,
wow.
where the real masses are at, where it's bigger impact and stuff of people, you know, watching it in a theater with other people. The impact is just greater than sitting at home with your family watching it.
That's true.
Yeah. So that's where we're at with that.
Now, what does a producer and director actually do on the set?
Well, the producer is the person that puts the whole puzzle together. He's not the exec producer. That's the money man. But the producer is the one that goes out and gets the writer. He's the one that gets the director. He's the one that sits back and puts the whole team together, who goes out and makes his film for him. And goes... and does his vision, you know, if he buys the writer's project, which is typical of a producer to buy a project and then have the writer and stuff, you know, do this to it or tweak this or do this and do that, and then he will bring on a director and say, this is what I want done, and then he'll bring a line producer on to make sure the movie comes in under budget or on budget And then you go make your film. And then the director, you know, he does his casting and brings his first AD and second AD and DP and all that kind of stuff. And then you go make your film.
Okay, Mary, so I got to ask you this. Other than your own film, okay, what type of movies are you into? Are you an action man, a drama man, a comedy? What type of movies do you enjoy?
Now, yeah, that's interesting because, you know, I consider myself a well-versed actor. You know, I mean, people would see me in movies like Ed TV that Ron Howard directed, but then Rennie Harlan directed me in a horror film. You know, and then I turn around and do Fletch, and then I turn around and do, and I did a movie with James Earl Jones and Beau Bridges where I played a militant guy. So it just depends. You know, right after I did The White Shadow, I was cast in Bay City Blues by Stephen Bochco, and that series there, I played a very, very serious minor league baseball player. There was nothing funny about me. And stuff in that, and Bochco had just seen me, you know, play Wardell Stone, the class clown in The White Shadow, but he knew I had that side to me, you know, so he purposely wrote this role in there for me for the series.
And this is when you moved to your next major network.
Yeah, that was my next major network right after I did The White Shadow on CBS. I did Bay City Blues, and I was on NBC. And then right after that, I did another one. There was a very likable character that Aaron Spelling called me into the office, and he said that the guy that's on the show right now, the ratings are just sinking. You know, Behringer's is killing us, and a couple other series, Cover Up, at the time was also killing them and stuff. That was on CBS, another one on NBC, and my show, Finders of Lost Love, with Tony Franzos and Deborah Dare was on ABC. So that was my third straight series, 1-1-1-1-1, right after each other.
Wow.
I would have preferred each one to last like 6-7 years, but they didn't. but that particular series, I played a very likable guy and stuff, where he was a con man that broke into a car, but I ended up being Tony Franciosa's chauffeur. So I mean, I can go from comedy, you know, to being likable, you know, to being, you know, I've done action before as well, playing a cop before and different things. And you know, it just depends to me. I mean, The Shield recently, you know, I'm back and forth on that show, and I play a used car salesman who owns his own used car salesman and stuff, and I'm a snitch. But once again, you know, it's drama. It's heavy
right.
drama. There's nothing funny about what I'm doing and what I'm saying and stuff, and you know, in those moments on that show as well. So it just depends.
So now, after telling me what type of movies you enjoy, who's your favorite actress?
My favorite actor?
Yes.
You know, I mean, because a lot of them are my friends, so I mean, I respect a lot of people's talent as an actor. Robert De Niro was my idol growing up. So that's the one I tried to emulate my work into and my technique, like Kobe Bryant did with Michael Jordan. That was his idol, and he emulated him, and look at him today. It's sort of like that. You know, Robert De Niro, to me, is the greatest actor ever to live. You know, the guy not only has done comedy, but if
Great
you look
one.
At this, if you look at his body of work from Casino to Taxi Driver, you know, I mean to even now these comedy movies he's doing and stuff, Meet the Fuckers and all this kind of stuff, the guy is just absolutely incredible. He is absolutely incredible. He can do action. He can do comedy. He can do heavy drama. He played a retarded guy with Robert Williams in a movie before.
Yeah.
He is to me what an epitome of a great actor is. So I would say Robert De Niro.
Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
He's one of my favorites too.
Yeah, Robert De Niro.
Yeah, he is a good one. I like all of his movies.
Yes, absolutely. Yep, and that's another thing. Every movie he makes is very, very likable. It's very enjoyable. Now, Deer Hunter, you can think of any movie that he's done, Meet the Parents, Meet the Buggers, you know, even a movie with Eddie Murphy he did, playing cops, you know, two cops on a TV series that people was videotaped. That was even entertaining because of him. You know, he's unbelievable.
Have you had the opportunity to meet him?
You know what? I've met him one time at the Golden Globe Awards. So was it the Oscars? Mm-hmm. I can't remember. It was a while ago, but it was a pleasure meeting him, and it was a fleeting moment. We've never worked together. I've never been in a movie with him, and it's so funny. Out of all the stars I've worked with, it's a vast, so many of them. I've never ever had the privilege to work with him, and hopefully that'll change soon.
I hear you. Maybe you're gonna have to even write something for him.
Yeah, right. There you go. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I love Denzel, what he brings to the table consistently. You know, his body of work is just amazing. He could easily be nominated every year. Angela Bassett goes unnoticed and stuff a lot of times now, and she ought to work a lot more than what she's doing. I think she is a fabulous, fabulous actress and stuff, where she's our now Cicely Tyson, you know, who paved the way for everybody with great acting, like Sidney Poitier, and paved the way for everybody back in the day when I first came in. And stuff, you know, things like that. It is so many. Well, the talent out there, the talent pool out there, is so fabulous now. It's really good to see that everybody has taken their craft very seriously and is up to ante in bringing a work performance to the table. You know, a very good friend of mine, Lawrence Hooten Jacobs, who played Boom Boom Washington in The White Shadow, who's in Cooley High and all that stuff. He played Joe Jackson. Fabulous actor. He can do anything. He can play the piano. He can sing. He can dance. You know, and once again, he should work more than what he's doing but the talent pool is so great. Forrest Whitaker he had one line in in a series I did in '81, and now look at him today. You know, I think he won Academy Award. You know, and that to me is beautiful to see, because I see his growth. Of where he's grown from, you know.
That staying power.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I did my first pilot, Durga Burger, Take Off All My Life at Burger King, when I was in high school and college, in between job. And I hired Robert Townsend and Keenan Ivory Wayans, all them guys I grew up with and we worked together and stuff. And it's beautiful to see Robert Townsend, how his career took off, and Keenan's a spectacular director today. I'm so proud of our people. Who's gone to that next level and stuff, and people can't talk about black people the way they used to, because we are a race to be reckoned with in this business. Period.
Absolutely.
I hear you on that. Now, you just did a swinger movie in Las Vegas. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I did a movie called Marriage Vows, and yeah, it's about, I wrote, produced, and directed, and I star in it, and a matter of fact, Cece Peniston's sister in the movie, Don't Touch If You Ain't Prayed, she plays my wife, and I knew this couple who was a real-life swinger, and most of the industry, it seemed like they are in one of three cliques. They are either in a drug clique, they are either in the gay lesbian clique, or they're in the swingers clique. So this particular person,
wait a minute,
I know,
those are the only three cliques.
Yeah,
so
those are
the
three cliques if
right
you want to survive in Hollywood. Those are the ones. Those are the cliques that are the people.
The drugs I'll pass
in.
Up. The
huh?
The drugs I'll pass up. The gay relationships I'll pass up. I guess I have to be a swinger.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So, yeah, exactly. It's safer, too. So, anyway, that this couple, I interviewed them, and I said, well, what exactly goes on in swinging? What is that all about and stuff? Give me a story on what you all guys are doing and stuff. And they gave me the story about what it is, a couple and stuff. You know, they go to a party if they see somebody they like, where they get together and they swap each other's wives or husbands. And most of them are married, though, and stuff, and they're very comfortable in their relationship. And then they go home. You know, I said, wow. So I said, I want to write a movie about this. I said, this has never been tapped on before. So I wrote a story about, I play a college professor, and I have a young, I'm
but not the nutty professor.
No. No, I play at a real college professor at UNLV.
Okay.
And I marry my undergraduate student, and we build our house up, you know, a dream house and stuff, and then we move in, and we're ready to live our life and travel and have fun and raise a family. And I had a son from a previous marriage, and I was a divorcee, and my wife, is in New York, and she lives above her means. That's why we divorced and everything. And all of a sudden, I get a telegram with her saying that she got evicted and has nowhere to go, her and my son. So I said, well, come on out here. I flew him out to my place, and she comes there with a guy, and I'm thinking it's the cab driver loading up all the luggage, and it happens to be her husband. Her now husband, and then I find out later on and stuff that they're swingers. She is now, my ex-wife is now a swinger, and they're in my house trying to persuade me and my wife to have sex with them.
And she's telling you how much she missed Big Daddy. And
exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
And my character is more holier than thou and stuff, and my wife is younger and she's hipper and she's more curious about, oh really, well that sounds interesting and stuff. And then she really gets curious when she finds out I told them, well, my wife's a square, she would never do nothing like that.
Oh,
and she
wow.
said, well, he said what? Well, I'll show him. You know, and that kind of thing. So it was a great experience. We have a great cast in there, Eddie Velez from Traffic and White Chicks. He's my co-star, Chip McAllister, who won $1 million for Amazing Race, and he played Ali in The Greatest.
Oh, okay.
You know, back in the day, he's in it and stuff. And then just have a great cast, and it wound up being a really really good movie. And I'm just finishing the touches of it for editing, and then it'll be ready for release.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
Is it going to only release in Las Vegas?
Huh?
Is it going to be what cities is it going to be released in?
No. We're hoping to get a theatrical release for it. You know, all rights are still available for that movie. Yeah, I have all rights available for that movie and my horror film, Sorority Sister Slaughter, because both of the movies are based on true stories. Matter of fact, all four of my films are based on
true
stories.
Wait a minute, Sorority?
Sorority Sister Slaughter.
What story was that based off of?
Yeah. It's based on an article I read about these six sorority girls went in this haunted house and each one was killed one by one when they were warned, and it was shut down for years and years and years, and they decided they were bold and they didn't believe in ghosts or whatever and stuff, and they didn't believe nothing was going to happen to them, and each one was killed one by one.
And I
was based on a true story.
In what state?
I think it was Sacramento. Sacramento. I was a producer. My company produced it, and I hired this student, this college student, to direct it because it was a female-driven piece. So I hired the college student to write it for me and direct it, and that's what they did, and they did all the research and everything because I was busy with my other films. And then I did Pastor Jones, too, another film I did, even though I didn't direct it. I wrote, produced, and co-starred in it. So I was busy dealing with that film, and I did a hairdresser movie, and then I did a Western Brothers in Arms, in which I produced. It came out for Sony. We made that for $1.1 million with David Carradine. So I didn't have my full attention on the horror film, but I knew I read the story, and I told him to look into it, write it, you know, and let me see the finishing cut after you guys see it. I mean, after you guys shoot it. And it was shot. I had some problems with how she shot it. But she's a college student, you know. But I put it together very nicely, and it's a real creepy film now.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
a
real creepy
take
film.
A look at that. Now, how can people reach you? Because we've just been so taken away that we haven't even, besides people coming to the website, be able to see your different web addresses. Give us some of your emails or web addresses so that.
Sure. Absolutely. People can email me at LarryFlashJ@AOL.com.
LarryFlashJ@AOL.com.
Yeah. And they can view me personally, view my work and my resume and all that kind of stuff at www.larryflashjenkins.com.
Okay, that's LarryFlashJenkins.com.
And not slash, but flash, like flashlight.
Flash, the song.
Yeah, exactly. And then my company, www.goldcoastproductions.biz.
Goldcoastproductions.biz.
Uh-huh. And then also, my publicist got a lot of nice stuff on me, nice pictures of me and everything. And that's www.spontaneouscapitalpr.com. It's spontaneous lowercase.
Wow.
Spontaneous capital P, capital R, .com. And they can click on and read about me and Glenn Plummer and stuff. He's over there with that company as well, and myself. And it talks about me doing Anna LaCosta. And you know, I'm partnered with Doug McHenry. He's my new producer partner who did New Jack City.
Okay.
He directed Jason Lyrics. He directed Kingdom Come. He produced Brothers, Two Can Play at That Game. He co-directed with my boy Martin Lawrence, Thin Line Between Love and Hate. What's so great about me and him, we can pick up the phone and get any star we want.
That's doing a new gospel.
I Didn't Lie Just in Time.
And make stars.
Yeah,
for those of you out
stars.
There listening who have some type of talent.
Yeah, we can get named stars. We're like Vivica is playing my wife in this coming up film. Shamar Moore is playing my best friend. Denise Boté, who's in Tyler Perry's latest movie, When I Get Married, is in it. Monique is in it. Clyde Jones is in it. Raven Simone is in it.
Wow.
Lisa Willis is the star, along with myself, who is one of the greatest gospel singers in the world. And people are going to hear her, I'm producing and directing it right after the first of the year, and it's going to be like Dreamgirls and Hairspray meets the gospel world.
Wow.
So you're going to be song and dance throughout the whole movie. We're going to be in the streets. We're going to be in church doing it, and it's a great script, and I'm very, very excited about shooting that. And we have an investor who's put up 90% of the money, and we're looking for the other 10%. He's guaranteed us 90% of $5 million, so we're looking for the 10%, which is $500,000, to go shoot this puppy. And we got Lionsgate, who's already committed to me, where they want to distribute my films. And so has Fox Faith has stepped forward as of today. So
right.
I got Fox Faith, New Line Cinema. I got Warner Independent Pictures. Lionsgate, I got four people that want to distribute my films.
You're listening to ThinkBigRadio.com. Where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful. Think big. So you say with the investors, you need roughly 10% to really get things started and make that happen.
Yeah, and what's so good, what the gospel movies, you know, a lot of people don't realize this. Tyler Perry's very, very first movie that he did, he took it to Lionsgate and they told him no. So he said, fine, I'll shoot it myself and I'll bring it back to you and will you look at it and distribute it. And he went and shot the movie for $5 million and came back and they put the P&A behind it and they distributed it.
Wow.
And that's the great thing about shooting the movie yourself, because you keep the money yourself. And that's the what's the name? He did Passion of the Christ.
Mel Gibson.
He used his own money, and that movie made over 300 and some odd million dollars. And he is so rich now off just that one movie. And all the studios are beating themselves in the head because they all turned him down, said no face-based movie is going to work. And I'm
wow.
saying to myself, that does work, because Dion can attest to this, too. We have at least 14 mega churches in Los Angeles area alone with 10,000 members or more.
Yeah.
And they're paying more.
So if you just hit those churches alone and gave them a sneak preview of the movie, they will go see the movie. And the word will start spreading around, because we got T.D. Jakes Church in Atlanta, Donnie McClurkin's out there in Texas. We got all the mega people and stuff to get all of our stuff going on. We got
people in
Michigan and stuff with the Winans, you know.
Now, we're down to our last minute, and is there anyone out there that you'd like to thank?
Yeah, I would like to thank... my very first agent, David Windsor and Martin Gage, because they're the ones that really, really pushed me and got me out there. And Steve Block. Steve Block discovered me, and he came up to me after he saw me in a play, and he said, did anybody ever tell you who the best 17-year-old actor in the world is? I said, yeah, me. He said, no, but you will be. And he signed me and took a chance on me who had done nothing.
Wow, at 17.
Yeah.
A coin flip.
Yeah, and took a chance on me. I was 19 at the time, but because I looked so young, I played 14, 15, 16, 17.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But he signed me and he pushed me. He pushed my career out there to get me the White Shadows and the MASHes and all the series I've done. Because I've started like 9 TV series to date, including The Fugitive, more recently Providence, you know, Recurring the Shield. You know, I've done all these great series and all these movies, all these guest stars. I've done countless amount of guest stars. All this was because of my very first agent, and they're the ones that triggered everything. And right now,
will you be able to come on again at a later date and share some of the things after you started the other movies?
Absolutely. I would
great.
Love that.
Okay. What we're going to do here is we're going to finish out with one of our commercials, and hopefully we'll be able to have you on again. It was very nice talking with you and you telling
great
story.
Talking to you and
so
Dion, especially
Harry.
Dion with the heels. I want to see Dion with them heels.
I'm going to
call
you
as
soon as we hang up.
Honey, we need to hurry.
I
want to
see Miss Fine Dion
I'm
with
coming,
the heels
I'm coming.
On.
Well, look at you looking like you lost a pound or two.
I lost more than a pound or two. I lost 3 dress sizes over the last 3 weeks.
Really? 3 weeks?
Yeah. Ever since I joined D's Life, those pounds have disappeared. I can even fit into those jeans again.
Oh, you mean those jeans that
Yeah, those jeans.
Oh, my.
I told Lisa about D's Life a month ago, and she had to get last-minute alterations on her wedding gown. Her maid of honor had weight loss surgery last year, and she uses D's Lifestyle to exercise, eat healthy, and keep the weight off.
Really?
And it really works. Now all of my girlfriends want to know about D's Life.
Cool. How about we come home after the ceremony, and you change into those jeans before the reception?
You're crazy.
Join D's Life Detox Program at www.dslifenow.com. That's www.dslifenow.com.